opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production. You are now listening to the Crunch Zone, broadcasting live from Bowl Central. This is Crunch Revenge, also known as Mike Lindsay, and I'm sitting with
Mark Linkenbaker, also known as at UofL Sheriff 50.
And we are here to talk about Louisville football, Louisville basketball. It's bowl season. It's something I don't know much about. It's the Crunch Zone coming at you right now. Okay, Mark, you know, we've had I've been traveling a lot. You're busy kicking out hundreds of articles, as you do every week. So a little off our game for the podcast, but we're back. We're both here. We're both in town. We're both ready to go.
Happy to be here.
So let's do a quick catch-up on a bunch of things. And, folks, we're going to catch up on a couple things you may not have heard about some of these old games that are already over with, just from our traveling experiences that we've had and kind of witnessing things firsthand. So let's go ahead and start with football, and let's roll it all the way back to
the
first ever meeting. Louisville takes down Notre Dame.
Yeah.
But let's not talk about the game. Everyone knows about the game.
Yeah,
let's
everybody's seen the Crumbs Revenge video.
Hopefully you saw Tua Noose, I think is the Celtic word for new beginnings.
Right.
Which signifies many new beginnings. At the time, it was Reggie Bonifon starting, so it could be a new quarterback. It was the first game in the series. Also could be a new beginning for Louisville, beginning a brand name football power.
With Bobby Petrino.
Nationally, not just with us.
Right.
Bobby Petrino kind of getting back to the main stage again from everything.
Absolutely.
That he's had to travel through.
Multiple meetings.
Yeah. So Notre Dame, we go down, and talk about some of the early impressions.
Well, you know, I think you know the coolest thing that I took from that game was the whole experience going on campus with you and Adam and walking around, seeing the school, seeing how many Cardinal fans made the trip. They kind of treated it like a secondary bowl, you know, almost. And it was really neat to see everybody up there. It looked like it was going to be cold. It ended up being nice and warm. And
yep.
I think the thing that I was taken back, and everybody knows that Louisville won the football game and how good that team played. But the thing that took me back the most was when Louisville had third down, second, third, fourth down in the fourth quarter on that winning, clenching defensive drive that they got, and they stopped Notre Dame, was that the defense asked for noise inside Notre Dame Stadium, and they got it.
And
it was
loud.
And I think what that told Notre Dame people and fans and people on NBC was that these Louisville fans are rambunctious. They are loud. They're here. They're serious about their football. They traveled up here. And not only did they come to Notre Dame and win for one of the few teams to ever go and win on their first game in Notre Dame Stadium, but they're serious. They bring the noise. They're not prim and proper.
Right.
They come in and they bring the noise, and they help out their football team win games, and they did.
Yeah, I was really impressed with that, and I kind of noticed that when they had their Notre Dame walk, whatever they called it.
I don't know what they call it.
Yeah,
Irish walk.
They came, you know, all the way from their locker rooms or somewhere, and they kind of walked around campus and they ended in the stadium. And there was two lines formed: the Notre Dame fans on one side for their entry, and the Louisville fans lined up on their entry. And certainly, the Notre Dame fans had a much longer line. They're the home team, and
sure,
they were all the way across the street and down the campus. For Louisville, it was very crowded where the bus was going to show up.
You know,
so we were kind of compact. But what I noticed was how much louder we were. Like, Notre Dame guys were coming in. They were like, all right, let's get him, guys.
Yeah. You know, let's go, guys. Yeah. We're going to hit them books this week. Now let's hit the Cardinals.
It was like
let's go.
1950s. It was like a really wholesome place. I did enjoy the atmosphere.
It was cool. But then they piped in the music, and then you realized how much they really were quiet, like the Notre Dame fans. And then compared to the Louisville fans, It was a big, big difference, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so while they have, they have a lot of traditions they do, just from being on the field and filming, I can tell you that they are very organized. They are very orchestrated. They know what down to sing what song. Not just the fans, but the band. They have lyrics to about four or five songs that they sing in unison. They sing it like church.
They all know when to sing it.
They know when to sing it. And to me, I was really impressed. It felt like a holiday for football. Like if football was a holiday, it's like it is celebrated at South Bend. They're not crazy, but it was respectful. It was cool. It was orchestrated. I was really impressed.
Well, you know, I think Notre Dame's a Catholic school. Everybody knows that. The Catholic Church loves its ceremony and everything like that. Well, Notre Dame football kind of replicates that from a church football perspective.
They
really do kind of have their traditions, and they have their stuff that they do.
Sorry, my dogs are trying to lay all over Mark now.
It's kind of funny because I have a whole bunch of just dogs in my lap right now. They've just decided that
we'll get to the bulldogs. That's for later.
We'll get to the bulldogs.
That's a little foreshadowing.
These are Cocker Spaniels, I believe.
But this is a Notre Dame brief.
Really great dogs, but kind of took me for a surprise. They just climbed up in my lap here while we're talking about Notre Dame. We're going to tell the bedtime stories, guys.
Well, here, while you're distracted with the dogs, let me go ahead and say that there were some other things that were happening. Like even on their scoreboard, they don't have replay. First of all, there's no instant replay on any plays. And when they had the switch over to NBC, which, by the way, they have their own private office inside the stadium because they have this huge, gigantic arena. You'd think NBC actually owns Notre Dame, and I guess they kind of do. But their screen, once again, like the 50, says, "We are now live across America and the world. Make some noise." And it was blinking. I was just like, man, this is like old time.
It's kind of like the insurance salesman from Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Very hokey, very excited, very predictable.
Was it not the smallest
80,000 seat stadium you've ever seen?
Yeah, smallest big stadium you've ever seen.
Absolutely. Like, I was looking at it, I was like, I think area wise, Papa John's Cardinal Stadium is larger than this.
Oh, it's larger, it's taller.
Larger, taller. It's brighter. Those lights are directed onto the field. In fact, the place where Louisville was coming from was like a black hole of noise because you couldn't really see the fans that well once it got dark.
Yeah.
Up in the stands, and it was kind of wild because it's dark up there, and it's not that tall.
Yeah, and so I think one of the ushers kind of walking around who were all just incredibly friendly, but he said, I think the seats are 12 inches. They're 12 inches apart. So you can imagine some of them, if Jared Lorenzen shows up, he probably is occupying up to four seats.
You and me, we're not 12 inches wide, man.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we're not large guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of they pack them in there tight. And one of the weird things is a lot of the Notre Dame fans, from what I understand, didn't want to stand up because once they're in their seat, if they stand up, they have to rearrange everything their entire row.
I may not get to sit down. It's like musical chairs of the bench.
So these Louisville fans that are standing up and cheering, they're kind of like breaking the order of things in Notre Dame if they were in the stadium. And, they were making noise, standing up, and just messing with the seating arrangements in Notre Dame Stadium.
All right, the last thing that I want to bring up before we move to the next topic, which will be Senior Day Kentucky preview, folks, is the band. Okay, so we talked about the band, that they're very orchestrated. They're very good. But when I was on the field, it was absolutely hilarious, and I loved it, and I wish Louisville would do this. So they put the band, first of all, right on the field, literally on the field. Like when I was taking pictures and video, I had to walk onto the field to get around them sometimes because there wasn't a lot of room for media.
Yep.
It's the fans are right on the field.
They tell you to do that too, actually.
They're very front. They're very cool about it. They're like, just get on with it, but you can do that.
Yeah, just don't do it during the play, and you're fine to walk onto the field and do that. So
okay, punishing the dog. All right,
we've never recorded with the dogs in the room with us before.
Yeah,
and it's been quite entertaining. I wish we could film this.
All right,
but as it is, it'll just be audio.
Okay, now with the band being on the field, the one thing I wanted to point out was, they will turn the music on at the end of the play. Now, if they may have a song, but as the game progresses, they change what they do. They get out less of La La Land, and they get into just making noise to interrupt the opponent.
Sure.
And they have a third down. They have third down stuff they do. They have fourth down stuff they do. Well, if they're going for it on fourth down. But in the second half, and as it got later in the game, they did it more frequently. They became less musical and more loud. And what they would do is they would start the music as soon as the play was done.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't even play a song. They would just make this reverberation noise where everyone is just kind of going up and down really loud with their instrument.
Right, right, right.
And they would have three different guys, maestros. And then one maestro would be the main guy giving the signals to all the band, because the band stretched. It was a gigantic band. They weren't all on the field, but when they were all together, there were like 100.
Yeah,
more than 100.
It was big.
It was gigantic.
Big, big band.
And they were very good. But during the game, they have a subset of them, which is still probably 50 or more. And the main maestro would watch the play. So as soon as the play, his hands go up, and he starts waving around, telling them to make lots of noise, and they make lots of noise. And then there's two other maestros who are like students, and they're and of course he makes them wear the corny outfits. So anyway,
of course.
The main maestro was like jeans and a hat. I don't know what he's doing. But so they would watch his lead. So soon as they got to the huddle, they kept it going. As they broke from the huddle, they kept it going. Yeah. Soon as they got to the line, they kept it going.
Yep.
And as soon as it looks like the quarterback puts his hand under the center's butt, they stopped.
Yep.
So all checks at the line could not be heard. All plays during the huddle could not be heard.
Well, theoretically.
Yeah. Right. Making it very difficult to be heard. And it only works, of course, when they're in your corner, because when you're in the faraway corner, obviously far enough. But yes, it was a factor. You could see them like trying to get some of their calls off when they were when Louisville was approaching the end zone and the band was going. I mean, they knew what they were doing, and they did it very well.
Yeah.
And yes, they were mic'd up with speakers.
Yeah, and I've seen that throughout the ACC. Bands mic'd up with speakers that are right in front of them to make them more loud than they actually are. I've seen that categorically in the ACC. So
I think you mentioned Clemson was one game where you really saw them adding noise because they weren't that noisy.
Clemson's fans got noisy, but they were prompted for noise by other things in the stadium before they really brought like the main event noise, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
So their band and then their overhead speakers prompted, almost like Pavlov's dog, you know, to hear hear these noises, and then 2, 3, 4 seconds later, the crowd would come in. So it wasn't like a natural effect. And I don't know if any stadium in the country really is like a all the time loud, you got to remind them that they're on defense sort of thing. But I think the Notre Dame game, and I think Louisville's band should do that, number one. But I think the Notre Dame game was a great moment for this program and this team.
Yeah.
Because they needed a moment like that to go and celebrate, to do it on the road, big time program.
Some disappointing losses, some tough losses. Some bummer moments, and we had Devontae healthies and all these things.
It needed its moment. The season needed its moment. It got it at Notre Dame, and it catapulted them into a pretty good season, a pretty good week.
Right.
The very next week against Kentucky.
All right, well, let's move to that. Okay, so we're done talking about Notre Dame. I do recommend making one road trip to Notre Dame. Louisville plays them in the future. It's worth one road trip for sure. Kentucky. So we got Senior Day. We have so many players that brought us so many memories. A lot of these Charlie Strong guys, the Andrew Johnsons, the Lorenzo Maldons. I mean, you can go Terrell Floyd. You can go on and on and on. And then you've got guys that have joined late. You know, some JUCO guys that are coming in. Michael Dyer. And so we have I don't know how many seniors were there. Do you know? Is it 19?
18 or 19.
Yeah. So many of them on an emotional game. And we don't want to talk about the game too much, but it's worth noting they came out and Kentucky had the better game plan out of the gate.
Yeah, they had a better game plan to disrupt Louisville, get into their head, get them. Number one, it's Senior Day. That's number one. So you're focused on, oh, gosh, this is my last game. I'm going to run out there.
It's emotional.
Have a rose. I'm going to give it to my family. I'm going to get my picture taken, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and before that happens, I'm going to throw you even off your game even further by Kentucky trying to create a fight and twice.
Now, let's talk about this. So we know at this point that it was premeditated because there is a no man's zone on the field.
It was absolutely premeditated.
Right? So what What's the boundary, just so people know, when people come out and warm up on the field pregame?
No man's land is between the 45s. The 10-yard barrier between the 45 and the 45 on the opposite side is an area for nobody to cross. Now, you might get some loose balls. You may get some guys that backpedal into there on accident during a normal warm-up. But for the most part, that's the area where the coaches and the officials hang out and observe their team or their teams.
Right. And 200-something people on the field helps organize the chaos.
And they've done that. The NCAA's mandated that as a no-man's land because they've had so many fights on the midfield logo. Prior to the stomping on the bird incidents in 2006 and 2005, like at Louisville, that was one of the last years that they didn't have a no-man's land, and the 50 was where everybody lined up, and that people would bump into each other and cause a fight.
Yeah.
So they took these out, and for the Kentucky game, the first little skirmish happened because some people were barking over the logo. They were coming over onto the Cardinal bird past the 45. People took exception to it. It was not a big deal. You ran on the field, got some footage of it. You can check it out on thecrunchzone.com.
Thecrunchzone.com.
And on our YouTube page, if you prefer.
And our YouTube page.
But the second one, the one that really everybody talks about, Kentucky came out of their tunnel from the north side, the northeast corner of Papa John's Cardinal Stadium. And every other team that's ever gone there, including Kentucky, has always run up the sideline and then gone onto the towards the crunch zone, and then gone on to their side of the 45 and gone on with their warm-up. Kentucky ran out of the northeast corner of the end zone and onto the field around the 5-yard line and then ran right through Louisville's warm-up. And then the players that were already previously on the field from special teams or whatever then crossed over into the 45, and there was a fight on about Louisville's 35 to 45-yard line.
Because it was past the 40, it was closer to the 35.
It wasn't on.
There's
the
a
50.
Photo. It's not. Yeah. It's no big surprise. This is an embellishment. There's photos of this.
We have video of it. I mean, it's video of it's on YouTube. You can go and look for it yourself. It was instigated. I wish you could have got the early part of the video up so that people could see it from start to finish, and because people kind of see it like about midway through. But you can kind of see it building in some of the earlier videos that we didn't publish, but it was all basically Kentucky running on to the field, disrupting Louisville's warm-up, talking crap, doing the upside-down L.
Yep.
And
which we now know is number 7 for Reggie Bonifant.
Yeah, it's big Reggie Bonifant fans do the upside-down L. I thought it was weird that Mark Stoops and his staff decided to instigate the fight with Louisville. I think it tells that program and the players within that program that they are an inferior program to Louisville. I think that when you do that, when you don't come out and focus on football right away, you're telling your team that you're going to have to gimmick your way to a win here. And they almost did. They almost got a couple good breaks.
I think they were playing. You know, they playing pretty good for the read option. You know, I think they were ready for Reggie.
Yeah.
And then Kyle Bolin, you know, comes in our third first. No experience ever quarterback to take a hike this season under Bobby Petrino, which has been a very difficult first year for Bobby with all the craziness going on at the quarterback position. But Kyle Bolin comes in, and they go empty backfield. It's like, no more read option. What do we do? Yep. And he is showing a lot of confidence throwing to spots and owning the plays and not second-guessing anything and just saying, this is a Bobby Petrino play, then this is what I need to do.
And I have an arm.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw it in the air.
Which is something that, you know, I feel Will Gardner struggled a long time to get to, that kind of comfort level of trusting the play. And then Reggie is more of a running quarterback, so he's not necessarily completely ready to run the Bobby offense in that capacity.
Yeah.
But it was probably the worst thing that could happen to Kentucky.
It was. I think if Reggie stays in the game, Louisville probably loses. I think Reggie's a big play quarterback, but I also think he's a momentum quarterback, where if things aren't going his way, he's struggled, and we've seen it at times during the season, to get back to a good place mentally. And so that's something that you'll see in a young quarterback, and I think you'll see that improve throughout his career at U of L because he's going to have a lot of good coaching on that. But Kyle Bolin came in and just lit it up. And it was wild to see. I didn't expect it because the last time I saw Kyle Bolin, he looked pretty bad. The offense, if you remember, going back to the opening of fall camp, they had newcomers days and they had veterans days. And those practices that the veterans had, Kyle was in, and the offense couldn't practice because Kyle Bowen was doing so many interceptions.
Yeah.
And we know he's coming off a knee injury and maybe he didn't have all the pop in his arm yet, but he looked bad. And so the last time that I saw him, last time all the other media saw him, he looked terrible. So when he came into the game, I thought the game was over.
Right.
And it
was. We're down 13-0. We got a third-string quarterback. You know, or fourth, because I'm sure Brent Nelson was ahead of him at some point.
He was.
So, yeah, you know, a third-ish string quarterback stepping into the game who has zero game experience on an emotional in-state rival game. Turns out that's the magic formula.
Yeah, and a lot of people at UK were like, oh, Kyle Bowen looks really good at Lexington Catholic, but they've already got Patrick Toll, so it doesn't matter.
That's right.
You know, and here's Kyle, the third stringer, outplaying Patrick Tolles. Tolles looked terrible.
He did.
Against Louisville's defense.
Threw
until
about
the fourth 50%, quarter.
Had about 170 yards passing,
right.
some lumbering running yards.
Neil Brown and Mark Stoops talked about how he was too inconsistent, that they really handicapped their play calling based on, you know, what he was able to do confidence-wise. So.
Well, let's face it. Kentucky gets a pick six. They get a fumble six, and they get a handful of
other
fumble,
turnovers and blocked
three
punt.
And out field goal stuff. So I mean, they weren't doing anything on offense. They scored a lot of points, but they really didn't do a lot on offense till that fourth quarter, which was a crazy fourth quarter,
mm-hmm.
and it just made the game more exciting. They would score, you'd have a heart attack. We would score, you'd have a heart attack. They would score, we'd have a heart attack.
Yeah,
it was a crazy fun game. It was a great installment of the rivalry, except for the behavior of the gentleman in blue. But outside of that. Competitively speaking, it was exciting, had a lot of ups and downs. And Kyle Bowen throwing 380 yards and three touchdowns in only 2.5 quarters, by the way, is a pace for a 600-yard passing game.
Yeah.
If he played a full game. Now, of course, probably wouldn't have been the case. It's fun to speculate, but at 2.5 quarters, 380 yards is disgustingly sick.
It's really disgusting. And what Devontae Parker did to that Kentucky secondary was even more disgusting. Why they decided to single cover him, I have no idea. But they kind of played Louisville how FIU played Louisville. But Louisville didn't have Devontae Parker in the FIU game, and so it was a totally different ball game. Plus, you have Will Gardner. He messes up his leg in that game. Reggie Bonifant's not in that game because his father had just passed away.
Right.
So you don't really know why you should employ that type of style. In my personal opinion, Kentucky really messed that game up in a lot of different ways. Louisville did too with their turnovers and their gifts. But when you think about everything that Louisville gave Kentucky, the fact that Louisville was still able to beat them shows that Kentucky as a defensive team is just so far and away what they should be if their head coach is supposed to be this defensive coordinator.
Defensive-minded coach,
and you have all
yeah.
these 400-500-yard games of yardage allowed, mm-hmm. and he's supposed to be this defensive guru. Well, let me tell you something. This is year two, and at the end of year two,
yeah.
and if you go back and look at Charlie Strong,
right.
first year one, he inherits Steve Kragthorpe's players, number 22 ranked defense or something, top 25 defense.
And also, like the double-digit loss mm-hmm. was like hard to find on Charlie's resume. Like,
it happened.
When they lost.
Yeah, it happened every now and then.
It was pretty much always really close,
yep.
and they weren't necessarily giving up huge yardage. It would just be a low-scoring game. Yeah,
until the 2012 loss to Syracuse, I think the largest loss was like 11 to Pittsburgh in year one,
yeah,
something like that. And, yeah, you didn't have the blowouts, number one.
Yep.
You didn't have these huge yardage totals. And I know what everybody's going to say. Oh, well, this is the SEC. This is the yeah. Big East. Blah, 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 blah. The SEC East was one of the worst conferences, one of the worst divisions
yep.
in football ever.
Yep.
Like, it's really, like, epically bad.
Yep.
You know, you have all kinds of coaches getting fired in the East Division, and Missouri won it for the second time in 3 years.
Yep.
You know, it wasn't that good of a division. It was very winnable. Georgia, a very good team. We'll talk about them later. But after them, I don't know what epic team you really have in that division.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, South Carolina is playing in a bowl. No one wants to watch. It's 6-6, South Carolina.
Yeah. Missouri got steamrolled in a game they shouldn't have been in. You know,
yeah.
they got They lucked their way into that game.
Yeah.
Georgia.
So you could say Indiana is the SEC East champs for beating Missouri.
Yeah. Indiana, SEC East champs.
I don't think it works like that.
And missing a bowl, you know, and that's the type of thing that you get. But, you know, I just think that when you look at the two coaches, when you look at Charlie Strong and you look at Mark Stoops, the differences are vast.
Right.
And, both can
recruit. What are you seeing on the field that makes you feel like it's going in a different direction?
It's not. I mean, they won some games. They're scheduling around the myth that is momentum.
Yeah.
Because they're dropping Western. They dropped IU years ago. UAB just fell off the map, right, and they had them on the schedule. And Kentucky scheduled a team who just canceled football.
Yeah.
Okay, what does that tell you?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's not an aggressive approach. Everything wants to be on paper. It wants to be recruiting. It's not real. It's false. It's counterfeit. Yeah. Everything that they're doing so far is counterfeit. I don't believe in it. And, you know, they come out with all that false bravado. I don't understand it. It's a loser mentality. It's a loser approach.
Right. It should be about business.
And they missed the ball again.
Yeah. You win games with execution and executing the game plan. So.
Exactly.
You can't get points for what they did, but they did lose points in the national media a little bit, and certainly in the local media, although probably not as much as they should have.
If that was Louisville, it would have been a huge, huge, huge story. It would have been, look at those, you know, those thugs and all that other stuff that they always pull out. And that's the other thing is, like, they always talk about how Louisville has all these criminals, but Kentucky's arrest record's like four times as long.
Stoops has been a busy man.
When your own team has its own bail bondsman, you know you got problems.
All right, so Senior Day, Kentucky. Louisville is victorious. They move on to 9-3, hoping for maybe an Orange Bowl, but a couple things had to fall into place. It started off good, but then all of a sudden Georgia Tech is beating Georgia from the SEC. Clemson's beating South Carolina. And ACC rolls off four wins, counting Kentucky, Louisville game. And the fourth was Florida State, Florida, for a rout of the SEC.
Yeah, really routed the SEC in the last non-championship week of the year.
So it made a lot of national headlines. So with that success of the ACC, pushed Louisville down in the bowl game. So we get to Selection Sunday, which they revealed the College Football Playoff, which I'm glad Florida State, of course, is in. It would be very disheartening for anyone not named Florida State in the ACC if a team can win 29 games and not get in the College Football Playoff. What chance do you have of making it? So I'm glad Florida State's in. But then we get to the selection day, and they start picking the teams, and everything is pointing towards
Russell Athletic.
Initially, it was Russell Athletic with Oklahoma, and then some shenanigans in the bowl rankings.
It was weird. So
start pushing people down.
Next thing you know, Mississippi State jumps three spots over Michigan State, both who didn't play,
right?
And so that Mississippi State can get an Orange Bowl spot, so that the Big Ten can fill up all 10 of its bowl teams. Barry Alvarez, there's a lot of Big Ten anti-ACC people and SEC people in that room and in the committee, and it's just odd. You see Auburn jump over Louisville in some of these other polls, and they didn't play either. They're behind Louisville. You see a lot of, like, even though everybody's stagnant and idle, you see a lot of these weird teams move up, but the most important one was the Mississippi State-Michigan State game, because it took the Citrus Bowl away from the ACC, and it took something that the league should have had based on previous poll, and there was no new information at all. Right. If anything else, Michigan State was probably even more highly regarded because of its head-to-head with Ohio State.
Right.
Not that they lost, but it was a good game, and they blew out Wisconsin, and Ohio State was able to make a jump of three.
Yeah,
or two, and or one. I don't know. They got in, and they shouldn't have. But that's another detail. But now the ACC bumps Clemson out of the Citrus and gives the SEC a team in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, and it even in the AP ratings, Ole Miss jumped four spots in the polls without playing.
And you know what? It's just strange. You know what I mean? When you get Auburn, who loses.
Or corrupt.
it's strange and corrupt.
Let's just go.
But
ahead
like, if they want, talk about if they this. Want everybody to just be kind of like ignorant to the fact that we don't know what you're doing, we know what you're doing. And then what you had was manipulation of matchups. So the SEC took like Louisville LSU. That was
okay. Well, so the Russell Athletic Bowl, Oklahoma, was going to be the matchup, and turns out Oklahoma loses to Oklahoma State. The shenanigans with the bowl, that pushes everyone in the ACC down one. Louisville is no longer a candidate for Russell Athletic Bowl, moving down to the Music City Bowl, and now everything is pointing towards Louisville versus number 22 LSU.
Right, and so you have what you have is you have a tier one. So the tier one bowls are the Belk, the Pinstripe, the Sun, or the Music City / Gator Bowl. So they're all tiered the same. And the way that the selection committee with the ACC, in theory, is supposed to operate is, what is the best scenario for our teams, for our schools? So Duke, it would seem, would be able to play in the Belk Bowl because they're a Carolina team. Right. And then they could just travel over to Carolina and travel over to Charlotte, stay the night in a hotel, play a good school. They don't have to go far. Okay, maybe that's not a great bowl experience. Maybe it is. But Louisville going down to Nashville would be a very easy, quick. You could get a huge number for your league. They get to play an LSU team who's handicapped because they can't throw the ball. They have a good defense, but they run the ball. Louisville set up to beat them. It would have been curtains. Louisville would have beat LSU, no problem. As it is, Duke goes to the Sun Bowl, all the way out in the west side of Texas, far away from its fan base. Louisville, instead of going 2.5 hours away, goes 7 hours away to Charlotte in Duke's backyard, and Notre Dame now moves down into the Music City Bowl to play LSU because LSU accepted the Music City Bowl with the contingency that they have the opponent that they want. Why the ACC did that, I don't know, but they can get away with it because they can say that all of their Tier 1 bowls are equal. They may be equal to them, but they're not equal to their fan base. They're not like the Belk Bowl and the Music City Bowl and the Sun Bowl are not all the same to Duke as they are to Louisville fans. Louisville fans are going to have their preference. The administration of Louisville will have its preference. And so to push Louisville out of the Music City, I think what it did, Louisville has a great opportunity to play George in the Belk Bowl. Don't get me wrong. That's a better opponent. But it robs a lot of people a quick, easy bowl experience. And I've talked to a lot of people that said, hey, I was going to be able to do the Music City. It was going to be really kind of a stretch for me to go down there and spend the night. I really can't do Charlotte because of timing, because of budget, because of a lot of things.
Yeah.
And now they'll have to miss out on a bowl experience.
What day of the week is it?
And it's a Tuesday.
Yeah, a 7-hour trip on a Tuesday bowl game.
Yeah, I mean, but that's kind of the way New Year's falls.
I don't know the
year,
name of the guy, but there was word that the ACC got really poor representation and that they did them no favors.
The Clemson athletic director was on the selection committee, and BC Interruption has a really nice BCInterruption.com. It's the Boston College SB Nation website. They have a really good article on how this all went down and how it really harmed the ACC in its bowl pairings, because it's not just about what bowls they got, but the teams that now they have to play against.
Yeah.
And so that in itself, top to bottom, is one way you can manipulate matchups to say, okay, well, the SEC is 8-0 in its bowl games. But you manipulated half of your matchups to get the opponent that you wanted to.
You refused LSU to play Louisville,
which was going to be a loss for your
team. And you
chose
to play an unranked team with a worse record that Louisville beat.
Yeah, with a team that – yeah, exactly. And so now Louisville plays Georgia, who that's a better game for Louisville, and it's going to help recruiting in a lot of ways. But that's a losable game for Louisville. And where LSU, you know, that's a 70-80% win game.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm okay with the risk reward of the Georgia because, you know, Louisville is not afraid of anybody.
Nobody's afraid of anybody. I'm just trying to showcase the way the manipulation of matchups happens.
Right, and then also the myth that is the SEC.
Right, it's like, oh, we're not scared of anybody, but you don't play anybody out of conference except for a handful of schools. Like Alabama's not scared of anybody. I can appreciate that. Auburn's not scared of anybody. But you can't tell me that Texas can't play Texas A&M in a bowl game and have and have credibility when it comes to that you're this big bad conference.
Not scared of anybody.
Because
right?
you're scared of losing the myth.
Yeah.
Because the top of the SEC, great conference. The middle avoids a lot of stuff. The bottom loses to anybody they play.
Right.
So it's like, okay, the middle, you're manipulating a lot of things to make sure that they have good records. And that's just placating to the boosters. That's just trying to get bowl wins and PR
yeah.
and, you know, donations into the school, into the athletic program. And hopefully you can sustain the myth long enough that you can actually build a good program.
Well, just for some numbers for folks of who's really not to play anyone, ACC scheduled 17 games against the Power Five this year in out-of-conference battles. They were 10-7, which was, I believe, the best winning percentage of any of the conferences. And if you scale down from 17 all the way down to 11, you will then find how many Power Five teams the Southeastern Conference scheduled. They scheduled 11, and they actually had a losing record. They were 5-6.
Yeah. It's like a Ponzi scheme. Like, if you go and you see a Ponzi scheme for a financial investor, you have a couple winners at the top. And in the middle, you have a bunch of losers. But what you hope is the middle, you hope to inject enough outside cash to cover it and have everybody lose on it. So it's exactly like the SEC is basically the Ponzi scheme of college football.
Yep. All right. Well, that's enough for the bowl selection process. Now let's just talk about Georgia, who we face for just a few minutes. Nothing big, because we're going to have an entire show dedicated to the Georgia Bowl game on the podcast. You know how Mark and his Sheriff Reviews is going to get 10 miles deep on information, more than you can digest, and we're going to cover all of that, and where he'll ultimately kind of reveal who he thinks is going to win that game. But just briefly speaking, so now we're playing Georgia. Of course, that is a media matchup that you have Grantham, who came over from Georgia, also
yeah, he
known
wasn't
as
fired.
They didn't want him anymore. And he comes over here, does an amazing job on Louisville's defense. And, in fact, one of our players, Gerard Hollerman's at the Nagurski Award banquet tonight, potentially winning. We'll check that as we're recording this podcast. But so he's done an amazing job on defense. Now he has to face Georgia. Georgia is a state that Louisville is recruiting very hard. They've got a lot of transfers from the University of Georgia. It could not be a better risk-reward game for Louisville than who we got. So however we got there, we don't like it, but we landed on the highest-ranked opponent in a state we recruit now heavily.
Absolutely. I mean, you're in that state all the time. There's already a bunch of players on the team, like Sheldon Rankins, D'Angelo Brown, Will Gardner, just to name a handful right off the top of my head, that are from the state of Georgia that maybe got recruited by the Bulldogs, maybe not enough. Maybe they feel slighted, but they're really big-time performers for the Cardinals. And Georgia is just a really great program. We had a series set up with them a couple years ago. ESPN decided that they wanted Boise to play the Bulldogs in a kickoff classic, so they bought out Louisville, replaced Georgia with North Carolina, and that's why we had the North Carolina series for 2 years there. But that would have been fun. Would have been great to make the trip to Athens. I've always really respected the Georgia program. Mm-hmm. Being without Todd Gurley is a big blow to them, but they've still managed to rack up 255 yards a game on the ground. That's 13th in the country.
Nick Chubb, I think, got Rookie of the Year, running back.
They know how to run the football at Georgia, and the great thing is that Louisville knows how to stop the run, and they're third in the country in rushing defense. They've given up some lately on the edges, and that's something that really needs to get cleaned up in bowl prep. Containing the edges, but nothing's going through the middle still, and that's everybody's trying the edges because there's nothing in the middle at all.
Georgia is north-south. Like a lot. I don't watch a lot. I'm not this football expert. I'm not.
Well, they're not running zone read.
But
they're not running
the most
Boston College.
They try to run it old style, like straight down your throat.
And they do it because they're stronger than you. And Louisville's going to have a lot of toughness on its hands. This is going to be a very, very physical ball game. It's also going to be a very short football game. Louisville likes to possess the ball. So does Georgia. There probably will be 7 or 8 possessions aside in this game. Don't expect a whole lot of quick possessions where you go back and forth punting the football. Both teams are going to try to maximize their possessions And if a team turns the ball over 2, 3, 4 times, game over, because you're just really limiting your opportunities. Georgia does a really great job of taking away the football. Louisville does too, but Georgia doesn't give the ball away like Louisville. And right now, that may be the difference in the ball game in Georgia's favor. Louisville, I think, can move the ball decently. I think they'll be able to move the ball against Georgia a little bit. Georgia really moves the football against everybody. I'm going to do a full evaluation on Georgia. They cannot pass the ball. So if Louisville can stop the run, they might be able to neutralize the Bulldogs quite a bit. But this is going to be a good football game. I can't wait to really break it down and get all the stats out. We're in basketball mode a little bit, but we're going to be – you're going to have more information for this game on thecrunchzone.com than you will any other game all year. I break down the ball game to the nth degree.
This is where Mark gets the night sweats and he's so excited. It's bowl season. He has all this extra time to focus on one game instead of a 5-6 day turnaround per game.
Yeah, exactly. I know the players, but I don't really tell you about them. I don't have time to type it, so I just kind of give you a brief breakdown of how things are going to play out. This time I'll tell you who, I'll tell you how, I'll tell you what I think. I'll tell you who's hurt, who's coming back. That's going to be important because Georgia has a few players that are coming back that will help them. And, you know, Mark Richt is a top flight guy. He's a good football coach, and he gets a lot of heat in Georgia that I don't agree with a lot of times from their fans. He's had a winning program. I know that they won a national championship at Georgia, and they haven't had that in quite some time. And that program really probably should have one, you know, at some point. You know, they're in an area where they can get players.
Right.
But it's a quick drive, 2.5 hours to Charlotte from Georgia. Both fans will be wearing red and black. It'll be kind of a fun atmosphere there in Charlotte. We're looking forward to getting down there and burning up the town again, just like the Belk Bowl way back when, which was a lot of fun, to be honest with you. I enjoyed the Belk Bowl.
Teddy's freshman year.
Teddy's freshman year, he got beat up.
Oh, yeah.
The team was very ill-prepared to play that game against North Carolina State. NC State was a veteran team. Louisville was basically sophomores and freshmen. The team that started in the Belk Bowl that year is the team basically that's finishing on December 30th. Up in Charlotte, the team that started that whole thing is going to finish it up there too. And the run that they've had is absolutely incredible. I couldn't be prouder of this senior group.
That's right. They're at 39 wins, and 41 is the record. And it was a Bobby Petrino-hosted team, I think, from 2002 to 5 or 3 to 6 maybe.
It would have had to have been 4 to 6 or 3
it
to
started,
6.
It started a little bit
It would have had to have been 3 to 6 because they won 9, 11, 9 and 12.
Yeah, and so with a win at the bowl game, this senior class can finish second all time Louisville history as far as a 4-year span. It would be 40 wins. They'd be one short of the record, which then Bobby Petrino could say he had a hand in both. Yeah, I'm excited about the bowl game. I was so mad that we were getting pushed around that LSU was trying to play a weaker, inferior, unranked opponent that Louisville beat. But in the end, we recruit Georgia. We're going to play a higher-ranked team, and people are afraid to play Louisville. So now you have to play us. And yeah. I know our guys are going to treat this game like a business trip. And they don't screw around. They don't think they're better than they are. They show up, and they are ready to give it their all. I'm so excited for the game.
Yeah, and it's an opportunity. Louisville's currently ranked 20th. There's a lot of attrition in the final poll because of bowl season. A lot of these teams have to play really good teams that they're matched up against. And so
Louisville's playing no different.
Louisville's playing 13. Louisville's in their 20th. They finished the last 2 years inside the top 15. They have an opportunity to do that for the third year in a row. Since 2004, they've had four top 15 finishes. They finished 6 in 2004, 6 in 2006, 13 in 12, and 15 last year. If they can finish inside the top 15 this year, then that'll be 5 out of the last 11 years.
Yeah.
Louisville will finish inside the top 15. I think that's a statement. I think beating Georgia is a statement. I think having a 6-0 record in a row in the last 6 against SEC schools is a statement. And then you're going to open up the season with Auburn for your seventh SEC game, possibly in a row.
In a neutral slash in the state of
well, it's in Georgia, and the Auburn fans literally just have to go over the line and drive over there. It's going to be so quick.
Yeah.
It's like an hour away from Auburn, so big-time game. There's going to be a lot of orange and blue in that one. We had 9 months to talk about that game, though.
Okay, well, let's wrap up football, and let's go ahead and move to basketball. Okay, so the new poll comes out, and the Cards are now fourth in both polls. I think anyone watching Louisville right now is probably cautiously optimistic. You know, we're winning games. Minnesota's good, Ohio State's good, but I think we can all see the warts, and we hope to work those out.
The warts are that they don't have any offense. I mean, we can go out and say it. They don't shoot. They don't shoot any. They don't even shoot well from the free throw line. They don't pass the ball, but they have great defense. And that's one cool thing about this Pitino team is that normally his defense isn't where it needs to be early, and he's relying on his offense, and you see the defense come around late, and then they're unbeatable in March. Well, the defense is already there. What's that going to be like in March? But then can this offense come around? And that's going to be the big thing. The shooting is just way down. Indiana's a very good shooting team. If Louisville has – this is a big juxtaposition between offense and defense between Indiana and Louisville. Indiana is not a very good defensive team. So if Louisville can't score against Indiana, they can't score against anybody.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. And I think we've been pleasantly surprised with Chinonu Onuwaku and his amazing, amazeballs outlet passes akin to Wes Unseld. If we can keep him from foul trouble. So he's really just like an amazing 10-minute guy. 10-minute a game guy. He'll pretty much have 10 points, 10 rebounds in 10 minutes, and then he'll foul out. Hopefully we can keep him on the floor. Anas showed some life. You know, he showed, you know, not every game, and that's what we talked about that preseason. With freshmen, you just don't have the consistency. So we have so many freshmen, though, that hopefully we can get two of them to contribute greatly each game, one of which we still not have heard from.
No, we have not heard from Shaquan Aaron. I don't know where he is. I don't know what the NCAA is doing. They're worried about who paid for his ninth grade year at Mater Dei High School.
Which was largely paid for by the school. So we're talking about a small overage that was left over for the family to play.
$2,000 to $3,000 probably.
That the family showed records that they paid it.
They have records, but the NCAA questions how they got that money. So, you know, I don't know how that affects.
I can tell you where they got it.
A bank?
Johnny Manziel's Johnny autograph Manziel. Signings.
Yeah, Johnny Manziel donated his autograph money to Shaquan Aaron, right?
Yeah.
That's
23 days. You brought it up the other day, though.
Yeah, it was. It was 23 days that the NCAA cleared up the Johnny Manziel case from
with a half-game suspension.
Yeah, from discovery to ruling, they got him a half-game suspension. He apparently made five figures on this, and it's a half-game. Shaquan Aaron's still waiting. This was known all the way back from when he was a ninth grader. It was known when he signed his scholarship papers. Was known when they submitted his stuff to the eligibility center.
It's been months, folks.
It's
months.
Been months.
Not this, 23 days.
This isn't something from the start of the year. This is something from when he signed last fall. So everybody says, well, I hope to hear something this week. But they've been hoping to hear something this week since November of last year.
Yeah,
so,
they have no idea when.
And they don't know when. The NCAA is in no hurry. They don't care about people. They care about their protocol more than they care about people. And that's a sad fact about the NCAA. It's one of the reasons why the Power Five is considering breaking apart from them, because they do not rule and they do not allow people to kind of come in and play. And this affects the lives of young men. And this is affecting Shaquan Aaron. It's affecting his status at Louisville.
Yeah.
If he can't get cleared by the end of the year, he won't play as a Louisville Cardinal the following year, because he'll go home, ride it out, go play for Washington or Oregon or something like that.
Right.
The next year when he's actually cleared. When he goes to a Nike school, they'll probably rule for him.
That's right. You know, but he's allowed to practice with the team though, correct?
He's allowed to practice, so his development is fine. But every single game these NBA scouts come and they watch, and Shaquan Aaron is on the bench. And every game that these teams come in that have great threes, he's on the bench. He's not playing against them. He's not cutting his teeth against great talent. So it's not that he's playing against Wayne Blackshear and he is getting better, but Wayne needs a spell also. It's affecting this team.
Right. David Levitch has been coming in.
You're playing David Levitch.
Hey, I'm all for the kid, but we're not a championship team with that
coming
off the
bench. You're not a championship team with David Levitch coming off the bench playing 5-6 minutes a game. Not only that, Wayne shouldn't have to play 35 minutes a game.
Yeah.
He should be able to play 30, 28 minutes a game, and his shooting percentage will go up. The team shooting percentage will go up. And there's a whole lot of factors
to that. Fresher legs, better shots.
Exactly. Shaquan Aaron's a very good shooter. Louisville could use somebody like that right around now. But it's not so much about what he could do for the team, but what he could do for Wayne as a person and what he could do for himself. And that's what's really a bummer right now. It's because it's not only affecting Shaquan Aaron, it's affecting Wayne Blackshear. Wayne's got to play a ton more minutes than he'd have to.
Well, you know, the big game with Indiana, most likely when you hear this podcast, the game will be over, and hopefully we are victorious as Cards have won 10 of their last 11 in Madison Square Gardens. Although when they first switched over to the Big East, it was a curse of the Madison Square Garden. We couldn't win a game. We even lost South Carolina NIT, I think, up there. They were dunking all over us. I'm not sure. I can't remember if that's exactly right, but I think so.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was a very hard start for Cards in the Madison Square Garden once they switched from the Big East. But 10 of the last 11, hopefully that Cards can take down Indiana. And Shaquan Aaron, we know for a fact, is not going to play. But interesting enough is Troy Williams is a guy that Coach Carter for Louisville helped recruit to Indiana. Now we've got, you know, they got the player that we wanted. We got the coach that they wanted. So there's a lot of intermingling going on with that game tomorrow. So hopefully the Cards will come out victorious.
There is. And the last time Louisville played in that game, Montrezl Harrell went absolutely off. You know, in the Madison Square Garden. It was, you know, it was the Big East Championship.
Yep.
Montrezl Harrell just went absolutely crazy. It was really his breakout party. You know, we knew about him. We obviously had seen a lot from him, but not like that. It was a big-time difference. And, you know, Troy Williams, he's going to have his hands full. In my opinion, that's a total mismatch between Montrezl and Troy at the four spot because they have to play him at the four.
Troy's going to have to go out and start shooting some threes.
He's going to have to stretch.
He's not going to want to bring muscle up with Montrezl.
He's got to stretch Montrezl out. Montrezl is actually a pretty good perimeter defender. I don't think we'll see a whole lot out of Troy Williams on Tuesday night. We'll see. Maybe you're listening to this after the game.
The game is over.
And I'm wrong. Then you can be like, that guy's an idiot.
Hey, let's have two canned responses. I'll be victory and you'll be failure. Okay. So we lost the Indiana game.
We lost in, and I'm failure?
Yeah.
Okay. Then Louisville.
No. You just say how you feel about the game.
Oh, it was terrible. I hated it. Wanted Louisville to make a shot. I went and popped popcorn, cut the grass.
Hit the damn free throws.
Back and
why didn't we hit the free throws?
They missed every free throw, too.
It was ridiculous.
But they can't shoot. That's one thing that's for real.
I'm victory. Man, I did not expect that. I mean, with as good as Indiana is on offense, I did not think we would shut them down.
Yeah.
To hold them to only 6 points for a game.
Why did Wayne Blackshear hit 12 three-pointers?
Amazing. All right, so there's your two canned responses because you're probably listening to this podcast after the game has won. We'll see how accurate we were with our representation.
Yeah, let us know. Tweet us and tell us how terrible of prognosticators we are.
But overall, it's been a great start for U of L basketball. I mean, they are ranked for number four in both. They're playing very good defense. They have two wins over the Big Ten, maybe three, depending on which side we went with on that.
It would be
last.
Awesome to start out with three. Louisville's going to win the Big Ten before they go and play the ACC.
That's
apparently.
Right. You know, and that's a big deal. You know, to have that many resume wins because you know Louisville hasn't had that many non-conference resume wins going into their conference season.
No, and normally when they play these Big Ten schools early in the year like they're doing, they normally lose them.
Right.
If you remember, like the Purdue's, the Iowa's, and all this stuff that Patino's done throughout his career here, he always loses those games. And then if they can beat Indiana, then that's a big statement. So.
Yeah. Well, I think the Big Ten has always been kind of like a physical defense and rebounding type conference. And Louisville's really good at being physical and rebounding and playing defense these days. Mm-hmm. So I think we have switched a little bit from the finesse that some San Francisco Garcia, the Larry Bannons, the Taquan Dean, finesse players that were intimidated a little bit about the physicality. And now we are actually delivering the blow. So I do think that some of the rebranding that we have and the amount of depth that we use and the focus on defense and stuff like that and just, you know, being good at rebounding. It has made us better suited for the NCAA tournament, which shows that we're the winningest program in the last 3 years. No program has won more basketball games than the University of Louisville in the last 3 years, including currently this year, so 3 years plus. Yep. And, you know, it's served us really well. So I'm excited about the season. There's so many good games. We know Duke is looking like they're going to be a contender.
Yep.
So it's going to be great to have them come into the Yum Center. North Carolina looks like Well, you know what? We know what North Carolina's going to do. They're going to lose every game. They're going to play Louisville. Marcus Page will score 32 points off 7 3-pointers like he did last year against Louisville. So, you know, we'll see what happens with North Carolina coming in, and we go to there. So, I mean, there's a great start to the season. Hopefully we get some good news with Shaquan Aaron, and it is on.
It's on, and, you know, like Miami, Virginia, those are other good teams that are going to come in.
That's going to be an awful senior game.
It's going to be tough.
Senior day,
it's going to be like 40s. It's going to be in the 40s, and it's going to be a war. And it's going to be a lot of fun if they can pull it off, but, man, it's going to be a tough game.
All right, so this is the over-under line for the Virginia senior day. Does Louisville score more points than how much they beat UConn last year on senior day?
How about this?
I think we beat UConn before.
Are there more points in the football senior day or the basketball senior day?
Yeah, or even that.
You could have something like that.
We could have 44 to 40. Three there. You know, the losing team has more points, or UConn loses to Louisville last year on senior day, has more points, or Louisville football team on senior day has more points. I mean, that would be a pick. That'd be a pick 'em.
It's definitely going to be a pick 'em, but I am looking forward to the rest of the season. I'm looking forward to conference play. I mean, obviously playing Indiana and Kentucky in a few weeks will be a blast. But really, the season really begins with the conference play, and that's after football season, which is great because you can start basketball season with the league play, and you're like, okay, brand new season, football's over. We're fully on to basketball right now, and it's going to make my life easier. Maybe your life too. I don't know, but
we'll see.
Man, yeah, I'm excited for basketball, but I'm really excited to keep 30 win streaks alive in basketball and 10 plus win streaks alive in football.
And the ACC is really coming around. You know, the basketball, everyone's like, oh, maybe it'll be like last year, but it turns out during the Big Ten ACC Challenge, while Big Ten did win 8-6, almost every single game that mattered went to the ACC. And then you have a lot of games like Miami taking down. Did they beat Florida?
Miami?
Yeah.
Yes, I think. No, I don't know.
I don't know. Okay, but you did have Clemson, who sucks at basketball.
Oh no! In basketball, Miami did beat Florida.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So you have
Sorry,
Miami.
Sorry, I thought you were talking football for some
Miami
reason.
Taking down Florida, who and Miami's now ranked. You have last night Clemson, who sucks at basketball, taking down number 18 Arkansas. So you're getting a lot of teams. I think it's now up to 6 ranked ACC teams. So it's not quite the 11 bid Big East Conference of 2009.
Not this
I think
year.
It was.
Not this year.
Not this year. But it's going to be very, very competitive at the top. The race for the top 4 seeds is going to feel every bit as exciting as the Big East.
Yeah,
it just may not go as deep with the bids. I'm going to go ahead and just throw a number out there. I'm going to say 8 bids.
8 bids. Well, you know, we've been in so many conferences just trying to learn all of the protocols that happen in the conference tournament and tiebreakers and all this stuff. This is the third league in 3 years, so we're probably going to screw some stuff up when we get down to the postseason because, like, the bowl selection stuff, there was some criteria in there that we weren't familiar with because we just have never done it before.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to learn and trying to get some stuff going on. So if we make some mistakes, please forgive us.
Yeah.
We're going to try our best and keep you guys informed as best as we can.
All right. Well, folks, that'll do it this week for the Crunch Zone podcast. Sorry we've been gone, but we made up for it. Caught you up on a lot of things that we kind of witness as we toured around. Don't forget, you can set us up for immediate download on iTunes. You can check us out at our website, thecrunchzone.com. You can check us out on Louisville.am, our partner, and set us up for you can find us on Stitcher Radio as well. So as we get ready for the big bowl game against Georgia, we've got big basketball games heading our way. Mark, is there anything you can think to tell the fans?
Go Cards.